Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. I'm on location. Today, we're going to talk about how a common nutrient may hold the answer to combating Alzheimer's disease. A study from Arizona State University. Good news there. Also, we have a packed show. We're going to take a look at what's really happening and give you proper contextual background to the effort to impeach the president versus what really happened in Ukraine. So we're going to have on a guest, Kevin Rees. Kevin has got some very insightful information for us about that. And he is a public interest attorney, political activist. He's a frequent author on articles that appear in Counterpunch and Truth Dig and Common Dreams and Washington Post and Alternet. And he co-hosts Clearing the Fog, Forces of Greed Radio with Margaret Flowers, which can be heard on every Tuesday on WBAI, our sister station, at 9 a.m. So we're going to talk about behind the scenes of Ukraine Gate, Joe Biden and the early Obama-supported coup with Hillary Clinton, Victoria Nuland, and others that is not being discussed at all. In fact, we'll play you a clip of Joe Biden acknowledging that he interfered in the politics of the country directly with the president of the country to get the inspector general, who had been there since 1980, fired. Now, mind you, up to a point, the democratically elected Ukrainian government had been refusing World Bank loans because they knew the onerous structural adjustment provisions that came with it that had destroyed nations' economies and exploited their natural resources. So we'll give you the larger backstory on all this. Also today, we are continuing with our challenge to Wikipedia. If it wanted to be a legitimate encyclopedia, which we would support, if they had legitimate qualified scholars and authorities who were identified and their bios and curricula vitae shown as the legitimate other, there are seven other legitimate encyclopedias that do exactly that. You know who the author is. And if you see that there is an example of error, you can write the encyclopedia and they will see that that error is addressed. With Wikipedia, no amount of writing to anyone causes anything to change. So we are addressing a letter today that will go out this morning to the board of directors. Now, we just sent one out on Friday. This is a follow-up, and we have three more coming this week. And each one's different. But this one you're going to find of interest. Also, to share some additional insights into the problem with impeachment, we have Chris Hedges from Truth Dig, who will be sharing his specific ideas of why it will not work. It really doesn't matter who's in office, Democrat or Republicans. The problem is not with impeachment, and you'll see what he has to say on this. Also, we're going to play you a clip. I saw this clip yesterday, and it's only 60 seconds long. And it's a homeless woman in a subway in Los Angeles, and she has her shopping cart filled with her belongings, and she's stopped by the police. And evidently, the police officer took this video. It's 60 seconds long. I want you to hear it. It's very moving, and it tells you that before you judge someone who's on the street, that understand that's a sacred soul where circumstances are beyond what they can handle at that given moment, and that's where they find them. We as a society, I believe, have a moral responsibility, if we're at all ethical and humanistic, to try to stop them from getting on the street, stop income inequality, stop the ghettoization of our society, stop the excessive gentrification of neighborhoods, which have destroyed it, stop the funding of the military-industrial complex. That's a separate commentary I'm going to do tomorrow, where I'm going to show we've spent $6 trillion directly, most of it done wrongly and completely used in a corrupt way, but also our total bill since 2001 because of these misadventures is now going to be, until they're paid, $14 trillion, including a million minimally dead in those areas. So exactly what were we bringing? We said peace, freedom, and democracy. No, we brought carnage, regime change. Shame on us. And mind you, this was fully supported by both the left and the right, Democrats, Republicans. It was not supported by true liberals, who would never engage in that kind of genocide, nor in true conservatives, who would not engage in that genocide. And that's where they share certain common. But the corporatization of these ideologies has caused us to be the ultimate renegade nation. Tomorrow, I won't have time today, I'm going to deconstruct the phenomena of Greta Thunberg. As someone who has spent so many of my years touring, lecturing, being in the media, multiple bestsellers, being with the biggest houses in the world in publishing, being on network televisions so many times, I saw from the beginning this could not possibly happen unless there was someone very powerful behind her. Well, we have been able to find who's behind her. And where her message is essential and honest, the people behind her are not. She's being used. And when I watch these people on television commending her about her Asperger, that's a great thing. It's not. Have you ever been with a child who has autism or Asperger's for a day, for 24 hours? Then you would see that somehow trying to glorify her, make her this new saint. She's just 16 years old. She's being massively manipulated. And her conditions in the autism spectrum disorder are not a gift. That's nonsense. Now, someone who works with autism and Asperger's and who's actually reversed it and see the horror that happens to families whose whole lives are changed with it. No, don't glorify something like this. But we have to not conflate it. Keep her message. Keep her inspiration. Keep her motivation to the young people alive. That is legitimate. Nothing else is. I will give you names, details, organizations, George Soros, Bono, Bill and Melinda Gates. I'll give you all the people behind her and how she got to meet the Pope and the French Parliament President and the British Parliament and everyone who's important in the world in getting all these awards. Did you ever ask yourself, did you just suspend, you know, indoctrination for 1 second to ask, how does someone get a Nobel Peace Prize nomination when they've done nothing towards world peace? And how they get Amnesty International when that award should be reserved for people who are in a conflict zone for a period of time, putting their own life at risk to save those people who are being destroyed, like working with the indigenous cultures in South America and being in the jungles with them and helping them. Those are the people that deserve these awards. So she's getting every award in the world for what? What exactly has she done? And who's writing her scripts? And who's giving her talking points? Well, we'll tell you that on tomorrow's program. We begin, as always, with the latest on health and healing. And there we're talking about something that's very common and very dangerous for a person once they have it, and that's Alzheimer's, which is a form of dementia. In this study, researchers revealed that a lifelong dietary regime of choline, that's C-H-O-L-I-N-E, that's one of the B complex, and I also suggest an equal amount in inositol, holds the potential to prevent Alzheimer's disease. Now, choline is safe. It's easy to take. It's a natural nutrient. It's naturally present in some foods and can be used as a dietary supplement. But also this research from the Neurodegenerative Disease Research Center looked at whether it's able to alleviate the effects of Alzheimer's. And a professor, Valquez, and colleagues found transgenerational benefits of the supplement. So it does impact Alzheimer's. So therefore, by taking, I would say, 500 milligrams a day of an inositol, 500 milligrams of choline, you can help your brain. And you reduce in disease-associated microglia, which are present in various neurodegenerative diseases, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis. So it offers exciting new avenues of research and suggests ways to treat a broad range of disorders, including traumatic brain injuries. They're all your athletes, multiple sclerosis, and Parkinson's. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Aging Cell. And by the way, just I'll give a little bit more on this. What choline does, it acts to protect the brain from Alzheimer's in two ways, both of which are explored in the new study. First, choline blocks the production of amyloid beta plaques. Now, these amyloid beta plaques are the hallmark pathology observed in Alzheimer's disease. And secondly, choline reduces the activation of microglia. Micro, M-I-C-R-O, glia, G-L-I-A. Now, overactivation of the microglia causes brain inflammation and can eventually lead to neurological death. Your neurons die, thereby compromising cognitive function. And choline supplementation reduces the activation of microglia, offering further protection from the ravages of Alzheimer's. And not that it's going to be fully understood by everyone who doesn't have a science background, but for the scientists in the room and the neurologist and psychiatrist and physicians, mechanistically, the reductions in microglia activation are driven by alteration of two key receptors, the alpha-7 nicotinic acetylcholine and sigma-1 receptor. And a new report this year found that choline can act as a blocker for sigma-1 receptors. This results confirmed that lifetime choline supplementation can alter the expression of sigma-1 receptor, which thereby attenuates microglia activation. So that's important. In the scientific community, it's well understood that Alzheimer's disease causes harm to the brain long before you see any clinical symptoms. And I've said many times, don't wait for a clinical symptom to manifest. It could take 20 to 30, 40 years before cancer manifests as a tumor, before the destruction of our arteries from our diet ends up with a atherosclerosis diagnosis or arteriosclerosis diagnosis. We're eating and becoming overweight with empty calories. Then one day we see, oh my goodness, we have, you know, elevated blood sugar, and therefore we're in a diabetic state. Long before that happens, we could have corrected all these diseases. We could make them reversible. But unfortunately today, we don't see the reversing of any of these diseases, all of which cause disorientation and memory loss. And the disease causes loss of motor control in those afflicted. And about minimally 6 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's, but probably three times that amount with dementia, which leads to Alzheimer's, like memory loss. So you're going to see in the next 5 years probably 15 million Americans who have Alzheimer's and dementia. And at that point, it's going to cost about $20 trillion to help those people. So we're talking about a major tsunami of hurt coming. And unless we take action now, so 500 milligrams a day of choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E, and inositol, both of those are very important because it really does a lot of good. All plant and animal cells require choline to maintain their structural integrity. And it's long been recognized that choline is particularly important for brain function. And the human body uses choline to produce acetylcholine. And that's a neurotransmitter responsible for functioning memory and muscle control and mood. So choline also uses this to build cell membranes, and that plays a vital role in regulating gene expression. So if you want to keep your brain healthy or want to help those who are older, choline and inositol every day. For those of you suffering from fibromyalgia pain, muscle pain, a University of Extremadura in Spain says the Reishi R-E-I-S-H-I, reishi mushroom, is good for that. By the way, at least 10 million Americans suffer from fibromyalgia every year. This was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study where they gave the Ganoderma lucidum, that's also called reishi mushroom, and found that it was effective, very effective. Reishi has several biologically active compounds in it, including what are called terpenes, T-E-R-P-E-N-A-S, which have been shown to increase the production of nerve growth factor. And nerve growth factor is a protein that helps to create new neurons in your brain and repair damaged neurons. This also enhances the communication between cells and reduces inflammation. Also, reishi has been shown to be beneficial for, well, reducing blood pressure and boosting the good HDL cholesterol. So get a better night's sleep, be happier, better aerobic endurance and body flexibility when you don't have fibromyalgia because you're taking reishi mushrooms. From New York University School of Medicine, the good cholesterol counters atherosclerosis in mice with diabetes. This is published in the journal Circulation. Now, we all know that the good cholesterol is the HDL. We know the bad cholesterol is the LDL, and the very bad cholesterol is the very low lipoproteins. So when you're taking in a plant-based diet, you're taking in what creates the good cholesterol, and that good cholesterol helps your atherosclerosis, a condition where high levels of cholesterol cause plaques to form in vessel walls, eventually restricting blood flow to cause heart attack and stroke. And many of these same patients have diabetes in which tissues are injured by high blood sugar. But when you're taking in the good plant-based diets, you're increasing and exercising aerobically, you're increasing the HDL. That's important. So, exercise, a healthy plant-based diet. Also from Chosun University in South Korea, the effects of soy genistein, Gene, G-E-N-I, Stein, S-T-E-I-N, on anti-tumor activity of cisplatin in human cervical cancer cell lines. What the study shows, in simple lay language, is that you're going to have a greater chemotherapeutic effect when you're taking genistein and cisplatin combination than cisplatin by itself. Just, you know, something where you acknowledge, okay, if people are going to use orthodox chemotherapy, use something that allows it to be better. And cellular aging is linked to structural changes in the brain. This is from the Max Planck Institute in telomeres that I talk about a lot on human chromosomes changed together with brain structure. Let me just repeat because some people may just be listening to this program for the first time. Telomeres, telo, T-E-L-O, mers, M-E-R-E-S, are protective caps at the ends of chromosomes that belong to the cell to keep it longer alive. And when they become shorter, that's a bad thing, then each cell is going to live a longer life. So they become so short that the genes they protect could be damaged. The cell stops dividing and renewing. Consequently, the cell is increasingly unable to perform its functions, and that's what happens when we age. So telomere length is therefore regarded as a marker for the biological age of a person, in contrast to their chronological age. And for two people of the same chronological age, let's say they're both 50, a person with shorter telomeres has an increased risk of developing age-related disease like Alzheimer's and cancer, and even a shorter life expectancy. So you want to lengthen those telomeres. How do you do that? Well, simple. Exercise, plant-based diet, and de-stressing. Based upon this knowledge, researchers have examined how much lifestyle can influence telomere length, and recent studies suggest that telomeres can change faster than previously thought. Possibly taking just 1 to 6 months of mental and physical training to elongate. And the exciting premise is that telomere lengthening may represent a reversal of biological aging processes. And we're on the first day of a 90-day program to see if we can prove that. And I believe we can. By the way, one last thing from Mount Sinai St. Luke Hospital. Optimism is associated with a lower risk of heart disease and early death. What is the bottom line? The bottom line is this. When you're optimistic, you have a lower risk of cardiovascular events and less risk of overall death. That was what this study found. They looked at 15 studies on cardiovascular events and all-cause mortality. 23,000 participants. And they were followed for 14 years. So if you're more optimistic, you can reasonably expect to live a longer life. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing, all from peer-reviewed literature, where we can implement it if we choose to. We're going to take a break and come back, and then I'm going to, before I go to my commentary on Wikipedia, I'm going to play this 60-second clip just after the break. Please stay with us. That was just a very brief, unrehearsed account when a police officer was approaching a homeless woman in a subway in Los Angeles. Think of it this way. We shouldn't have any homeless people in America. For those who have mental conditions, they should be getting professional humanistic help, not given a look at a convulsive therapy, not thrown into the snake pits that were so common with psychiatric institutions for the last 200 years. Now, this is in Los Angeles, where you have all these virtue shamers, you know, the people that walk the red carpets that are making $20 to $30, $40 million a year, who believe that they can't talk with you, you have to talk with their retainers, and they live in gated communities with armed guards, but they want everyone else not to have a weapon. They want open borders, but they don't want you to come on their property. The hypocrisy is palpable. So here's my challenge to them. You have over 75,000 minimally people in the arts professions, many of them in Hollywood. Why doesn't someone speak with this woman, find out her story, and then give her a place to stay so she's not sleeping in subways? We should be helping everyone we can. If they're drug addicted, we should get them into counseling. I ran drug addiction for Trafalgar Hospital for years and decades, had a very high rate of success. I'll be happy to share my protocols. If you have these big mansions, Beyonce, I'm talking specifically right now to you and your husband, Jay-Z. You have, I believe it's a $60 million home you paid for in Beverly Hills. Surely there's an extra room there. You have a full staff. And if you find that a person is emotionally competent and is not a criminal and wouldn't be stealing from you, but simply is one of the vast majority of homeless people who have had some circumstances in their life that were more than they could handle, so now this day they're on the streets. Just like they're not on the streets, some people, they're living in their cars, which means they're living on the street in their cars or RUVs. And yet we have people out in California who don't want people sleeping in their cars in their neighborhood. What's this say about the shaming community with all of its virtue signaling? My God. So why don't one of you take this homeless person in. Invite them in. Do your due diligence. Do your homework. I'm not asking you to just take anyone in. And let's see who takes them in. In the interim, anyone in this audience who knows this person, please reach out to them. I will be willing to give them a home and help them, not buy them a home. I have room in the sanctuary until she can get on her feet. And all the people I've housed, over almost 500, I give them food. I give them whatever input, whatever help until they're up and able to reenter society with dignity and be able to sustain themselves. But isn't it amazing? Ask all the people in Hollywood, every single one, go up and down Rodeo Drive, go up and down every single place. How many people have you helped? Don't tell me what you believe in. Tell me what you do, because I'm going to judge you by your actions, not what you say. So someone out there, reach out. Let's hope first celebrities reach out first. They have lawyers, they have handlers, they have all these, they have an army of people around them. Make room for a homeless person. Now, you imagine if every single celebrity was able to take in a person who's homeless but just needs a break. I'm not talking about taking in people that are going to rip you off or hurt you. There's proper ways of evaluating that. Then we wouldn't have any homeless people in San Francisco or in Los Angeles or New York or any place else. I think that these people are wealthy enough that they could afford to help another human being. Now, to the internet. As you know, I've written, along with Richard Gale and one of our attorneys, Amy, and Neil Greenfeld, 45 articles challenging the legitimacy of Wikipedia as it now stands and has for the last 10 years. And no matter what they say in their bylaws, no matter what they tell you to go through to get biographies of living people changed so there's no bias, none of that is true. None of it. Because every single person in the alternative health field, all your holistic cardiologists, holistic oncologists, neurologists, psychiatrists, and your holistic dentists, everybody in the holistic field has been condemned en masse by Jimmy Wales, the co-founder's lunatic charlatans. And this group of skeptics are the ones who control and the bios. Now, on Friday, I gave you the behind-the-scenes look at the editors showing you their illegal biased positions, because Wikipedia now's board of directors has a copy of that program, and they now know that we know who these editors are. We know their biases because we've gotten an administrator and whistleblowers inside Wikipedia to share all that. So they can scrub everything today. We have it. We've nailed you. You're toast. And we're just beginning. We intend to challenge your nonprofit status. We intend to challenge every member of Congress to show that you are not what you say. And that's why people should share these. And that's why you should write to your legislator to do an open hearing investigating Wikipedia, just like they did with Google and Facebook. This is our next letter today to the board of directors of Wikipedia. And we hope that you also send it with your input. Make your input civil. Show that you're above what they have denigrated themselves into being, the editors. The title of this article is Wikipedia, the Internet's Devil's Island. Institutional incarceration, isolation under torture, physical and or psychological abuse takes many forms and shapes. During the course of modern European history, perhaps the most notorious and immoral prison was Devil's Island. Single small island, only had one inhabitant. It was a French penal colony located on one of the smaller of the three islands in the Salvation Islands off the coast of French Guiana. That's the northeast part of South America. Right beside it was another Guiana, but that was controlled by a different country. It is estimated that 80,000 prisoners, many who were charged solely with something simple like stealing some apples, some loaves of bread, for the vast majority, for reasons of political conscience, passed through the colony during this century while the colony operated from 1852 to 1953. 75% died, largely from inhumane living conditions, hard labor, and tropical disease. Only a small handful of prisoners managed to safely escape the island, such as Henry Chereri and René Belnoit. Later, they would write books. One was Papillon and the Dry Guillotine, 15 Years Among the Living Dead. The subtitle of the book, 15 Years Among the Living Dead, conveys the horror of Devil's Island's inmates and what they had to endure. The French state was unforgiving and unapologetic in what, by today's standards, would be defined as extreme torture. Dysentery and malaria were rampant, and hard labor in the jungles exposed prisoners to the dangers of poisonous snakes, poisonous centipedes, poisonous spiders. Sanitation was simply non-existent, and all were severely malnourished and frequently beaten. In fact, the French could not just tolerate someone being in isolated confinement, such as Dreyfus. He was the only person on Devil's Island. But they also made sure that at night, when he went to sleep in his tiny little cell, with open bars at the top so bats could come in and suck his blood, poisonous snakes, anything that was poisonous could get into his cell. But then they shackled his ankles at night. Now, mind you, that he was guarded. He couldn't get out. There was no place to go. They would dump corpses around the islands, and then the sharks would eat the corpses, so the islands were surrounded by these sharks. And they didn't even want him to go out and sit and look at the ocean. So he would have sores on his ankles, and he couldn't move during the night. He couldn't get up and go to the bathroom, so he had to soil himself. The French didn't care. But the most famous prisoner on Devil's Island, whose story would later become archetypical for illustrating the clash between tyrannical forces of power against progressive democracy and individual freedoms, was Captain Alfred Dreyfus. In 1896, Captain Dreyfus, who was Jewish by birth, was arrested as a spy and tried for treason. This was despite the lack of witnesses to testify against him. There were none. And a personal testimony indicating another military officer was the real spy. All the French in power knew this, but anti-Semitism was rampant. So the only court evidence against Dreyfus was a spurious document that was later discovered and proved to be forged. Hence, the institutionalized racial prejudice against Dreyfus and the institutional denial of his innocence sealed the captain's fate. After being wrongfully declared guilty on two occasions, Dreyfus was sentenced to life imprisonment on Devil's Island. It finally took one courageous French novelist and journalist, Emile Zola, later twice nominated for the Nobel Prize in Literature, to implicate French army officers and the French president, Félix Faure, of anti-Semitism, absolute corruption, and a judicial cover-up that resulted in Dreyfus' reprehensible sentencing in the most horrendous prison of its day. Zola risked his entire literary career by penning and publishing his accusations against the French authorities in a letter entitled I Accuse, in a popular Parisian newspaper. The socio-political controversy that erupted over Zola's charges of institutionalized anti-Semitism pitted the bigotry of the Catholic-leaning French military ranks and the reactionary French court against liberal social sentiments that were gaining strength in France's move towards democracy. Yet because of his actions, Zola, too, was charged with criminal libel. Following a second conviction, Zola fled and entered exile in London. What became known as the Dreyfus Affair continued to rage against French conservatives and political appointments while Dreyfus wasted away off the coast of French Guiana. The Dreyfus Affair provides an example of imprisonment solely based upon biased and prejudicial grounds. Many of the penal colony's prisoners were there because of their beliefs and philosophies or activities that were deemed heretical and dangerous to radicalized and reactionary powers. Today, I'm sorry to say there exists a virtual devil's island, an islet that operates as an isolated gulag within the nearly 6 million entry pages on Wikipedia. This archipelago of pages, which accounts for approximately 1,000 Wikipedia entries, largely concern alternative medical systems and natural health modalities, meditation, prayer, beliefs in a religion, beliefs that vaccines should be proven safe and effective before they're used, the proper use of supplements, the power of integrative medicine, body-mind medicine. All of these investigations, including into parapsychology and what should be wrong with genetically modified foods and toxic agricultural chemicals such as glyphosate or Roundup, and opinions also about mandatory vaccines, safety and efficacy. In addition, many of our most popular and leading voices in the alternative medical and lifestyle community, as well as activists who challenge the corruption of big agriculture and big pharma in Silicon Valley and our federal regulatory agencies, these are the people who are penalized and sentenced without any judicial oversight. They are sentenced carte blanche by an invisible court to a virtual penal system. As long as the internet is operative and Wikipedia is a functioning wannabe encyclopedia, a large number of medical doctors and scientists and researchers and activists and natural health advocates and even visionaries who dare to explore unexplained phenomena outside the restrictive laws of scientific materialism and in particular skepticisms will have their personal character wrongfully shackled in Wikipedia's prison without any legal means of recourse for unwanted libel and defamation. This virtual aisle pages have their own penal guards, editors within the skeptic movement who have been armed with undeserved administrative privileges by Wikipedia's co-founder, Jimmy Wales. He has fully enabled them. He is supporting them. He's protected them. What they have in common is a shared faith in modern skepticism. In effect, Wikipedia has been transformed and is transforming segments of the encyclopedia into a cyber continent of skepticism to promulgate its science-based xenophobia against all rules of editorial decency and objectivity. Skeptics are permitted to engage in character assassinations as if immune to standards of law that the rest of society must adhere to. Those who the skeptics target to disparage and denigrate have no rights whatsoever. You don't know who the anonymous accusers are, nor are there any applicable and functioning means to appeal while their tainted biographies linger in a virtual solitary confinement. Not unlike the movie, The Purge, Wells has intentionally green-lighted skeptics to carry out its mission to persecute people whose theories and practices they disagree with. These editors destroy reputations without consequences. None are held accountable, and the cancer of skepticism continues to metastasize through Wikipedia's entries. We need to draw a very clear distinction between skepticism as a skill in critical thinking that I support, and skepticism as a belief system that carries many of the defining qualities of a modern-day cult. As in most cults, modern skepticism, such as Michael Shermer, James Randi, Stephen Novella, Paul Offit, Richard Dawkins, and many others, is extraordinarily intolerant of views that oppose its blind faith in a strict scientific materialist interpretation of reality that disregards and undermines the value of subjective experience such as intuition. In fact, their criticisms converge on paranoia and conspiracy. And skepticism supporters missionary activities that are given the task to condemn the heathen while promoting its reductionist doctrine, such as Susan Gerbic's Guerrilla Skeptics on Wikipedia. Therefore, skepticism is a social movement is at great variance with healthy psychological skepticism. For example, it is perfectly reasonable for a parent whose teenager is on psychoactive drugs and attempts suicide to suspect or question that the drug may be partially responsible. A parent may proceed to do homework, investigate the scientific literature, and would readily discover that there is, in fact, a confirmed correlation between SSRIs, such as Prozac and Zoloft, and Paxil, and relapses into depression and anxiety that have been shown to contribute to violent behavior, including suicide. The parent may also very likely discover that, though there's a large body of evidence in the peer-reviewed literature, that some of these drugs have been shown to be no more effective than a placebo, a sugar pill, in clinical trials. With this new knowledge, the parent would have every right to question these medical authorities who argue SSRIs are perfectly safe. Skepticism is a very closed-minded and extreme authoritarian network of organizations and publications to smaller radicalized militant groups who share a superiority complex. They believe their interpretation of scientific data is the final word, and therefore their authority ought to be used to surpass any and all contrary views. They will put their opinion ahead of peer review and supported scientific literature. As I just stated, this is especially the case for medicine and health, and body-mind medicine, and the treatment of disease and the theories about the mind and consciousness. Therefore, a healthy skepticism attempts to eliminate bias. Skepticisms find comfort in the unquestioning complacency and laziness of believing only in its own ideological convictions and opinions. In our opinion, Jimmy Wales and his cadre of skeptics, and by extension the entire skeptical movement, represent a very dangerous faith-based dogma that is breeding every single second of the day a scientific culture of intolerance, bigotry, and authoritarianism that is inimical towards individual human rights, in particular the freedom of choice on health matters. We witness this especially in the area of the heated vaccination mandate debates. The most ardent, rabid pro-vaccine advocates are found among the skeptics. Mr. Wells operates a hybrid of the late 19th century French judicial system. He has institutionalized prejudice, and there is no counterbalance or deterrence to correct skepticism's abuse of power. Today, there are hundreds of Captain Dreyfuses lingering without any efficient means for appeal in Wells's penal colony. In conventional courts of law, jurisprudence demands a day in court and a jury appears. If found guilty, the option to appeal is available. And it's been shown that upwards of 40% of people in prison are actually innocent of the charges leveled against them. That's part of what the Innocent Project has shown us. When we consider how Dreyfus was unlawfully and cruelly treated by the French court, or the psychotic trials led by the Inquisition centuries earlier, we can better appreciate how Wikipedia and the skeptics act as a law unto themselves, a prosecutor, jury, judge, and executioner. This has always been a danger when ideological zealots are handed power. More skeptics are also in the offing, and most skeptics who administrate and continue to expand their presence on Wikipedia keep their identities anonymous. Very rarely do they convey a professional knowledge about the subject matter they edit. They are not, in most cases, doctors or medical researchers. Groups such as Susan Gerbic's Army of Editor Trolls are more often than not recruits from skepticism's rank and file who find a purpose in advancing skepticism's fanatical mission to destroy the reputations of medical theories and practices outside of skepticism's pro-big pharmaceutical purview. Fortunately, since we started putting out these exposés on Wikipedia and skepticism, numerous people from all walks of life are being educated about the systematic rot within Wikipedia and skepticism's threat to public health. British religious scholar Andrew Harvey has remarked that fierce truth is very hard to speak in America. People are absolutely terrified of the truth at the moment, yet finding ways to tell the truth is the name of the game, and to keep on telling it because the lies raged against it are now hysterical. Emile Zola found his voice, as have climate activists not beholden to Al Gore's capitalist green solutions to sustain the status quo as the earth continues to get hotter, nor the thousands of parents of vaccine-injured children speaking up against the medical regime that has every intention to remove the democratic protections of personal consent from state-sanctioned medical interventions, and the numerous progressive journalists and scholars who have found the courage to speak against the government and corporate corruption and untruths. At least for the moment, they had that right. Eventually, Dreyfus was brought back from Devil's Island and declared innocent. He was fully exonerated and knighted with the Legion of Honor. That's France's highest honor. So, too, did Zola return from exile and received amnesty. Later, speaking about the Dreyfus affair, Zola said, "The truth is on the march, and nothing shall stop it." We now see clear signs that more independent investigators and journalists are starting to take a harder look at Wikipedia. It is just a matter of time before a tipping point is reached and the darker, fetid, completely unethical side wails and a skeptic agenda finally reaches the mainstream media, at least those that have not been captured, and Wikipedia will sit on the hot seat alongside Facebook and Google. At the end of the day, what can be done? Every American institution, for and not-for-profit, have final arbitration boards, most often a board of directors. Wikipedia's board has the power and fiduciary responsibility to put a halt to Mr. Wells and the skeptics' unprofessional biases and hyper-aggressive personal attacks against hundreds of thousands of physicians, scientists, clinicians, professors, authors, journalists who endorse and practice complementary and alternative medicine, or those who question and challenge the excesses and lack of credibility in that part of orthodox medicine that does not work and does harm. However, we are also aware that with few exceptions, the majority of large corporations in the pharmaceutical and agricultural industries, virtually all of Wall Street and Silicon Valley, intentionally refuse to be held accountable for their crimes against humanity. Wikipedia needs to be held to a higher standard because people's lives are at risk. Remember, it is only when there is open hearings where those who have been condemned to the Internet's Devil's Island, innocent victims of the excesses of this current purge, are allowed to come forward and tell their stories, present their evidence, and then put Jimmy Wells and the skeptics on the hot seat under oath and provide all the documents which we have, and we don't need discovery or depositions to show what they've been talking about, how much disdain and hatred they have for the very people they're supposed to be objectively editing. I believe that we should demand immediately from Jimmy Wells personally, Wikipedia's board, unless they're just a rubber stamp of Jimmy Wells' massive ego, that every single one of the living biographies be taken off, completely eliminated, because none of those people put their voluntarily put their bios on. Almost always their enemies did, knowing there would be no way to correct the injustice done to their reputations. This is where you, the public, should tell your legislators, demand immediately open hearings before Congress under oath. Also, we should be questioning every single state's Secretary of State that oversees nonprofits, as well as the Internal Revenue Service's Inspector General, to do audits of Wikipedia to see, are they in violation of their nonprofit status? The federal government, are they in violation of their indemnification where they cannot be held accountable? It is time that they are held accountable. This is number 45 in our ongoing series. We intend to do anywhere between 100 to 200 additional ones, including backgrounds on all their board, all their members, all the skeptics. And we have hired additional investigative, award-winning investigative journalists who are now working diligently on this. They had the power. They had the resources. We had the truth. In time, truth will win out. I'm Gary Knoll. Let us now go over to our guest who is standing by, Kevin Rees. Z-E-E-S-E. I gave you his bio earlier. Nice to have you with us today, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Kevin, I'd like for you to give us your interpretation based upon your research of what is really happening and has happened historically in Ukraine that the mainstream media is refusing to look at objectively. We all understand they want to get Trump out of office. They want to do that before he was even elected. But there's a difference between legitimately impeaching someone and then looking at who was participating in adventures in Ukraine based upon a coup that took away the democracy that was Ukraine, no matter how corrupt it might have been, for American people supervising virtually every state of Ukraine, and Biden's son's role in this. The form is yours.
Well, the coup of the United States in Ukraine was one of the most open coups in U.S. history. It occurred in the Obama-Biden administration with Hillary Clinton as president. As the coup began in December of 2013, Victoria Nuland was publicly saying that the U.S. has invested more than $5 billion in 5 years to prepare to bring Ukraine into the U.S. orbit. And she was called on a phone call, an open phone call. For some reason, she was using an open phone line, saying that Yats should be the prime minister to the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. So openly saying, well, let's pick Yats, and he did turn out to be the prime minister. Then on top of that, the president of Ukraine, Poroshenko, after the coup, was a longtime U.S. informant for 6 years. According to WikiLeaks documents, he had been providing information to the U.S. on Ukraine. And he was known as OU, our Ukraine insider. OU became the president after this very open coup. And then Joe Biden's son, Hunter, this is the kind of the crux of the impeachment issue. Joe Biden's son, Hunter, was appointed to the largest gas company in Ukraine, along with John Kerry's family friend and financial advisor. Both were put on the board of this gas company and were paid tens of thousands of dollars a month to be on that board. And this is what Trump wanted to investigate when he talked to the new president, President Zelensky, of Ukraine. He wanted this investigated to see why was Hunter getting paid so much, and what was the role of Joe Biden in firing a prosecutor general in Ukraine. The issue around that is the prosecutor general was investigating that gas company. Poroshenko had multiple times asked him to stop the investigation, but he continued it. And Biden ended up going to Ukraine and saying that he's going to be here for 6 hours, and you're not going to get that billion-dollar IMF loan if that prosecutor general is still the prosecutor when I leave the country. And within 6 hours, Biden claimed in a videotaped statement to the Council on Foreign Relations he was able to remove that prosecutor. And that's what Trump wants to have investigated. That's what Rudy Giuliani, Trump's personal lawyer, has been investigating since December of last year. And he was making a lot of progress, talking to current and former prosecutors, legislators, in order to get that investigation happen. But then there was an election. And OU, Poroshenko, the president, our Ukraine insider, was defeated in a landslide, with the incoming president, Zelensky, winning 73% of the vote. And that undid all of the work that Giuliani had been doing since December. There was a second election this summer for the legislature. Zelensky's team won that completely again. So Zelensky was in complete power with both the presidency and the parliament. As a result of that, Trump had a conversation with Zelensky a few weeks after the parliamentary election. And in that conversation, he multiple times urged Zelensky to do him a favor, investigate Biden, investigate Hunter Biden. And that's the crux of the impeachment process that's just beginning. Now, trying to pressure a foreign leader to investigate a political foe is raising lots of questions. And it is looking like there will be an impeachment in the House. The majority of members of the Democratic Party, including their leadership, Nancy Pelosi, supports impeachment. But the problem for the Democrats will be the Senate, where you need a two-thirds vote in order to win a conviction of impeachment. That looks unlikely, even though 22 senators are up for re-election in 2020. So if public opinion changes, perhaps there'll be some change. But getting two-thirds vote is a very difficult proposition. And so what we're going to end up with is most likely, unless things change, Trump still in office, running for re-election after being impeached by the Democratic House and not convicted by the Republican Senate. That will rile his base up, excite his base, anger his base. Will that be enough to change what looks like a losing re-election President Trump? He has very low polls. Never achieved 50% in the polls. He's at 42%. That's been consistent. And every major Democratic candidate defeats him in face-to-face polls. And so right now it looks like he's losing, but will this impeachment backfire? And the other question, of course, is what happens to Joe Biden? If the story comes out about this Ukraine coup and the Bidengate aspect of it, will Joe Biden's political career be ended? That may be a good thing for the Democrats because he's old. He's been very weak in the current debates. He has a terrible record on war, on racism, on mass incarceration, on student debt, on corporate power. He has a terrible record that can be easily attacked. So he's not as strong a candidate as he looks. Perhaps getting rid of Biden will help the Democrats in November. So a lot is up in the air. This process is just beginning, and we'll see where it goes from here. Right now, about half the population supports the impeachment effort. I think the Democrats need to spend some time to build impeachment up to get to about two-thirds support in order to hurt Trump, because otherwise I think this could backfire and help.
I appreciate your input, but to me the most important issue is that we, the United States, through Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and Newland, who's married to the most powerful neoconservative on the planet, used our money, $5 billion, to engineer a coup. They put in fascists. They put in neo-fascists. They put in people that supported Nazism and even had swastikas. And yet the media refused to cover that part of this. And look at the damage. The same group of people also put a coup in place in Honduras, tried to unseat the democratically elected Maduro in Venezuela, then starved it to death in sanctions. And then we went ahead and did these other regime changes. No one is talking about the consequences of these coups. No one's talking about the consequences of regime change in Libya and other places. So that's the real issue for me. Why doesn't the American media have the honesty and decency to do what they're fully capable of, just tell the truth? Whoever's responsible, because both Democrats and Republicans in power have been responsible. There's no one who has clean hands when it comes to American foreign policy. And that is a crime that has not been leveled at any of the people who've been responsible for this. And that's the permanent deep state and the consensus of power of about 200,000 people and corporations that control Washington, both domestic policy and foreign policy. And as you said, Biden admitted to threats, in effect extortion. I watched that film. We have it. By the way, I also have the actual signed affidavit from the former 36-year inspector general of the country, who was never shown to be corrupt, but who was an anti-corruption prosecutor, who said in the affidavit that he was investigating corruption not of Joe Biden's son, but of the corporation he was hired by this oligarch who was engaged in illegal activity. And Poroshenko brought pressure upon him that he was getting pressure from Obama and the administration, Joe Biden specifically. And after repeated threats to Poroshenko, then he fired this guy, asked for his resignation. That's the story that we're not hearing, and that's unfortunate. Kevin Aziz, thank you very much for coming on and sharing your insights with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
For everyone, we're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.